ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 13. The title of the chapter is Garuvana Converses with Jad Bharat. Text 14. Tamstan Vipannam Sahi Tatra Tatra.
Tamstan Vipannam Sahi Tatra.
Vipannam sahi tatra tatra vihaya jata parigraya sarthaha
vihaya jata parigraya
sarthaha
vihaya jata parigraya sarthaha
ते द्यापि न किश्चिदत्र आवर्तते द्यापि न कश्चिदत्र वीराध्वना पारम् उपैति योगम् वीराध्वनः पारम् उपैति योगम् Word for word, please repeat. Tan, tan.
Tan, tan.
All of them.
All of them.
Vipannan.
Vipannan.
Embarrassed in various ways.
Embarrassed in various ways.
Saha.
Saha.
The living being.
The living being.
He.
He.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Tatra, tatra.
Tatra, tatra.
Here and there.
Here and there.
Vihaya.
Vihaya.
Giving up.
Giving up.
Jatam.
Jatam.
Those who are newly born.
Those who are newly born.
Parigrihaya.
Parigrihaya.
Taking.
Taking.
Sa arthaha.
Sa arthaha.
The living being searching for his own interest.
The living being searching for his own interest.
Avartate.
Avartate.
Wanders in this forest.
Wanders in this forest.
Adaya api.
Adaya api.
Even until now.
Even until now.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
Kaschit.
Kaschit.
Any of them.
Any of them.
Atra.
Atra.
Here in this forest.
Here in this forest.
Veera.
Veera.
O hero.
O hero.
Advanaha.
Advanaha.
Of the path of material life.
Of the path of material life.
Param.
Param.
The ultimate end.
The ultimate end.
Upaiti.
Upaiti.
Gets.
Gets.
Yogam.
Yogam.
The process of.
The process of.
Devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Translation. My dear King, on the forest path of material life, first a person is bereft of his father and mother, and after their death he becomes attached to his newly born children. In this way he wanders on the path of material progress and is eventually embarrassed. Nonetheless, no one knows how to get out of this, even up to the moment of death. Forward by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In this material world, family life is an institution of sex. Yan mai tunadi grihmedi sukham. Bhagavatam 7.9.45. Through sex, the father and mother beget children, and the children get married and go down the same path of sexual life. After the death of the father and mother, the children get married and beget their own children. Thus, generation after generation, these things go on in the same way without anyone's attaining liberation from the embarrassment of material life. No one accepts the spiritual process of knowledge and renunciation, which ends in bhakti yoga. Actually, human life is meant for jnana and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation. Through these, one can attain the platform of devotional service. Unfortunately, people in this age avoid the association of liberated people, sadhu sangha, and continue in their stereotyped way of family life. Thus, they are embarrassed by the exchange of money and sex. Om Agyan Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadanshikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna. So I see that we have lots of children in the class today. So are you all going to pay attention? Yes? And listen? Because I'm going to ask questions in the end. Yeah? Let's have a quiz. Okay. So I'm going to tell you a story, huh? So once upon a time, Narad Muni came to the earthly planet. Yeah? He visited many places of pilgrimage. He went to Prayag, he went to Kashi, he went to Setu Bandha, he went to Srirangam, and so many other places of pilgrimage. And what he saw really broke his heart. He saw that the people were very greedy, and they were telling lies, and their only motive was to fill their bellies. Their purpose was to attain more and more opulence and wealth. He also saw that people had forgotten religious principles, the Vedic way of life. And if they were gurus or sadhus at all, they were pretend gurus. They were fake sadhus who had ulterior motive of accumulating more wealth, associating with women, and engage in other paraphernalia related to sense gratification. So while he was still in this he was concerned. You see, a Vaishnava is paradukh dukhi. And Narad Muni, he's one of the greatest Vaishnavas as we know of. So he was meditating on the conditioned souls and on their miserable condition in this Kali Yuga. So while he was still thinking along these lines, he reached Vrindavan. So when he reached Vrindavan, and he comes to River Yamuna, where Lord Krishna has done so many sweet pastimes. So he's from a distance, he sees that there is a lady there, and she's in great distress, and time and again she cries as well. And he sees that along with the lady, close to her are two men. They're lying unconscious on the ground, and she's trying to revive them, you know. And she looks here and there. She's looking if somebody can help her. And then along with her, she also has many ladies who are trying to assist her. So she is in this situation, distressed situation, and from a distance, Narad Muni watches this. Then his curiosity gets greater, and he wants to go closer and try to find out what's going on here. So he goes closer, and then when this lady sees Narad Muni, she feels greatly relieved. She says, "Oh great sage, it is my good fortune that you have come here, and I think that you can help me. Can you please help me revive these two men on the ground?" And Narad Muni is then curious to know, first of all, who are they and what's going on. So she starts telling her journey. She says that she was born in Dravida Desham in South India. And after being born there, then she grew up in Karnataka. After growing up in Karnataka, she then moved up further, and she went to Maharashtra, where she was respected and all was still well. And then she went to Gujarat, where she immediately lost her youthfulness, her freshness, and she became old and fragile. And these two men who were with her, they also became completely weak, and they were about to die. So then she said that now she has come to Vrindavan, and as she has come here, miraculously she's got her youth back. She says she's blissful, but these two, they are still lying on the ground, they're still unconscious. So can anyone guess who are these? Yes? No.
What is that?
Yes, exactly, Prabhu. So then she reveals her identity. She is none other than Bhakti Devi. And she, then when these two men with her are her sons, Gyan and Vairagya, knowledge and detachment. And all these ladies were accompanying her when she's there in Vrindavan. See, all these ladies were with her. They were the holy rivers, the holy places of pilgrimage. You see, when one is in Vrindavan, we know that all the places of pilgrimage, Krishna says, all the holy places are in Vrindavan. So we don't need to go anywhere. We just, once you're in Vrindavan, it's equivalent to visiting all the holy places and even the topmost holy place in itself, Vrindavan. So in this way, so she says that when she came to Vrindavan, obviously bhakti thrives in Vrindavan. But still, who cares about knowledge and detachment? No one wants knowledge and detachment. Everybody wants bhakti. And knowledge and detachment is actually a byproduct of bhakti. So it will come automatically as you do bhakti. So in this way, she tells her her journey. So how does that journey come? So that journey is the Gaudiya Vaishnava. So this is what I just narrated to you was, this is from Padma Puran. So it is mentioned that when Bhakti Devi said that she was born in Dravida Desham in South India, this is indicative of how in Kali Yuga, bhakti in one sense is eternal. Devotional service to Supreme Lord is eternal. It is always there. But in this Kali Yuga, it was reintroduced by the 12 Alvars in South India, the poet saints of South India. And I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with the 12 Alvars and their beautiful pastimes and the poetry written by them in the glorification of the Lord. So it started with the 12 Alvars in South India. And then when Bhakti Devi says that she went to Karnataka, that is, she went a little bit southwest. There she thrives, there she grew up. Means there it bhakti movement spread far and wide and it was revived. Because Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and because in the 13th century they revived bhakti and all the sampradayas were revived, like Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka, they had a systematized system of bhakti then. So all the four sampradayas, they were nurtured and nourished, and there were thousands and thousands of seekers of devotional service. So that's why Bhakti Devi says that she grew up there, because it was bhakti was thriving. And in 13th, 14th and 15th century, in those medieval times, there was a great boom in bhakti, in people were taking to the bhakti movement. So this is how she says that she was, she grew up in Karnataka. And then she moves up north to Maharashtra and Gujarat. So she says she was still respected when she was in Maharashtra. And then she says when she came to Gujarat, she completely lost her youthfulness. She became premature, old age overtook her. So that is explained by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas that by that time the impersonalist philosophy had started to creep in. So impersonalism, that form of the Lord which is impersonal, that started to become popular. And it is mentioned that, you know, there were saints, poet saints like Gyanadev and what's the other one's name? A few others who actually they wrote beautiful poetry on the Lord. But they were not, this was not about the personal form of the Lord. It was the impersonal form, the Paramatma in the heart. So then it became a little impersonal. That's why she says that she lost her youthfulness. And then detachment and knowledge completely became minimal. And then she says that when she comes, now she says that now that I'm in Vrindavan, I have regained my youthful, nature, which means bhakti is thriving in Vrindavan. But she says jnana and vairagya, they're still lying here. So then she again, after narrating all this pastime to Narad Muni, then she again requests him. She says, now that you know where I'm coming from, please, can you help revive my two sons, knowledge and detachment, jnana and vairagya? So Narad Muni, of course, he wants to help her. So he starts chanting some Vedic mantras, but they have no effect. Then he starts chanting the Upanishads, and even that doesn't have any effect. Then he even chants Bhagavad Gita. He narrates Bhagavad Gita, but even that doesn't have any effect. And then the four Kumaras happen to come there, and then they understand the situation, and they immediately say, let's chant Srimad Bhagavatam. So all the sages together then chanted Srimad Bhagavatam, and Jnana and Vairagya then were in their full form. They were nurtured, they got their strength and vigor back. So this is how, when in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says that actual human life is meant for jnana and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation. Through these, one can attain the platform of devotional service. This is what it means, that when we have jnana and vairagya, you see, this symbol, the same knowledge was given by Lord Kapila Dev to his mother Devahuti in Canto 3, Chapter 25. The name of the chapter is The Glories of Devotional Service. So in that verse 18, she asks the question that, how do I become, the senses are very strong and the mind is very fickle. How do I attain detachment? How do I attain detachment from sense gratification and from allurements of Maya? So in answer to that question, then Kapila Muni had narrated this beautiful verse in which he says, Jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yuktena chatmana paripashyati udasinam prakritim cha bhata jusam. Jnana vairagya yuktena. He says, in that state of self-realization, by practicing of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. Right? So paripashyati, you see things in the right perspective when knowledge and detachment is done along with devotional service. And udasinam means you become detached from, indifferent to material existence, and material influence is almost completely destroyed, or material influence cannot be seen on such a person who is practicing devotional service and who is cultivating knowledge and renunciation. Now, one might say that, pure devotional service, that definition of pure devotional service that we initially studied, it's like, anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma vyanavritam, means it has to be free of knowledge and detachment. And only then it is favorable to Lord Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that cultivation of knowledge and detachment, which are favorable for getting a foothold in Krishna consciousness, it may be accepted initially, but eventually it has to be rejected, because devotional service depends on nothing except on the service itself. So devotional service depends on nothing except on the service itself. And he says that you can cultivate it initially. Right. For example, how do we cultivate it initially? When these living entities, we are so enamored by the things around us, we fall trapped to the illusions of Maya so easily. So, after doing this for many, many lifetimes, eventually one may come to this conclusion that this is actually not working. You're trying very hard. You get something for a few moments, or it lasts for a few days, for a few months, and it goes away, right? For example, say if you buy a new car, right? You suddenly, it brings a lot of enthusiasm in your heart, right? You bought a car, you'll drive it here and there, you'll share it with your friends, you'll take them somewhere with you. So you are in the car consciousness for a few days or a few weeks. And after that, you realize that it actually goes away. You're not that at that level when you actually got it the first day, the second day. It slowly wanes. So what does that mean? That means that happiness is not in the car. It was just an illusion in your own mind. That car, if it was to bring you happiness, then why did it go away? Why did it did not stay with you eternally? So it was just an illusion of Maya, and that made us think that this car is making us happy. So in this way, we keep falling prey to Maya's illusions. But then, after many, many lifetimes, if a jiva is intelligent, will understand that this is not working. That this is just, it's like you try hard, so hard, and yet you just get something which is again, it's temporary. It again loses its potency to please you, to give you happiness, because it never was meant to. So when you sort of become a bit dejected by your material pursuits, then you actually start to wonder, then if this is not happiness, then where is happiness? Where do I look for happiness? And what can give me permanent happiness? When you come to this place, this level of knowledge, then you automatically become detached. So next time when Maya throws an illusion at you, and you're like, okay, yeah, but you don't fall prey to it, right? So it is in this situation, you see, the Lord is with us lifetimes after lifetimes as Paramatma in a heart. So when He sees that we have reached this situation, we are at this consciousness now where we are wondering, okay, where do I find happiness? And we start looking for spiritual alternatives. Then it is said by, you know, Brahmanda Brahmate Kono Bhagyavanji, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai, Bhakti Lata Bhi. And then the Lord, He will send His devotee. You will come across someone who will actually guide you. And then in the association of the devotees, you develop faith. See, this is what Prabhupada means by cultivating knowledge and renunciation at preliminary stage, right? So this preliminary stage is then has to move on to the next level. You see, because otherwise it will become the knowledge of the jnanis. What do jnanis do? They understand that there is no happiness in this world. And what do? You retract your senses. You withdraw your senses from sense enjoyment. But then you do not engage them in service of the Lord. So you are at the level of jnani. Means you're looking for liberation. Right? But you are not taking the next step of bhakti. Because you just think this material world is full of miseries. There is no happiness. So let's not take part. Let's not participate in this world. Let's stay within. And you look within. So they meditate on the impersonal. That's a jnani. But a devotee takes the next step. They go to the next level. So then, after coming to that level, as you know, Srila Prabhupada also, he gives a very good example. He says that these American boys and girls, they had no idea of who God is, who Krishna is. And they didn't know that happiness lies in spiritual life. But just because they believed in the words of Srila Prabhupada, they followed their guru, and they could do which was so rare in the whole world. No one else could achieve what they had achieved. You see, and then he says that, look, they have now taken even sannyas, and they are contributing in Srila Prabhupada, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So he gives an example. This is how it transforms their heart. And by bhakti, they got knowledge and detachment. So we all know that practice of bhakti as practicing devotees, one of the preliminary aspects is reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Because you see Bhagavatam in itself as in the very first canto it is mentioned, Krishna Swadhamu Pakade Dharma Jnana Dibhi Saha. When the Supreme Lord left this planet, what went with Him? Dharma and Jnana. Religious principles and knowledge, they went along with Him. So dharma jnana dibhi saha kalyo nishtha drisham esha puran arko dunodita. This Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun. And those who have lost this vision in the dense darkness of ignorance, they will get guidance from Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, this is and this the narration in Padma Purana is actually called Bhagavatam Mahatmaya. Because eventually in the end, what could revive Jnana and Vairagya? The reading of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right?
So knowledge and detachment can only come when there is bhakti. Because Srimad Bhagavatam, if you see, chapter after chapter, it tells us about how the devotees of the Lord, they attain perfection by engaging in devotional service. And they could, you know, and they're mostly pastimes of great kings who could give up such great kingdoms that we can't even imagine their opulence these days. You know, gold was like something so common for them. Their doors, their walls, their pillars in their houses, their bedsteads were made of gold. What to talk of gold? You know, these days you get a few pennies and you think, you know. So this is how opulent it was. And cows were in millions. And cows who were giving milk, good quality cows. So that was the kind of opulence that existed. Elephants, horses, these kings, like even Maharaj Bharat, he renounced, you know, a family, so perfect, wife, so perfect, sons, no problem. He wasn't suffering anything like King Anga, because his son, King Vena, was the cause of his detachment. But here, Maharaj Bharat did not leave his kingdom because any family member was giving him trouble or any of his kingsmen were giving, you know, his trouble. No. He left because he wanted to pursue the path of bhakti and he wanted to attain perfection. So in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam is glorious because it tells us about those devotees who pursued the path of bhakti to attain perfection. So why we say that jnana and karma are in themselves, like jnana means speculative knowledge and karma is activities to attain either higher planets or to get better life after this life. But then it is also mentioned that at the level of pure bhakti or transcendence, then jnana and karma, they remain part of bhakti. And how this is, it's mentioned that bhakti towards Krishna, how can it happen? So to know someone means only if you know someone you would get attracted towards that person. So then in Adi Leela, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is mentioned that there is actually a warning given that one must not neglect hearing about the knowledge. What is the knowledge then? What is knowledge for us as devotees? First of all, we need to know who we are, who Krishna is, and what is our relationship with Krishna. So who are we? We are eternal, we are spirit souls, right? And we are part and parcels of Krishna, right? And then who is Krishna? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is the only enjoyer. And what is our relationship with him? We are his eternal servitors. And in engaging in devotional service with him, we can be happy. So this is knowledge. This is transcendental knowledge. This is not just speculative knowledge. So when we come to this knowledge, then this is what it means, that when you are at the level of pure bhakti, then this kind of knowledge has to be cultivated. And it stays a part of bhakti. It becomes a part of bhakti. And it helps us to move forward, progress on the path of bhakti. And then also, if you see, when we want to meditate on the Lord or we want to chant around nicely or you want to do devotional service to the Lord, we must also know the name, form, qualities and pastimes of the Lord. This is knowledge. This is transcendental knowledge, that we are trying to understand the pastimes of the Lord. We are trying to hear Srimad Bhagavatam again and again. And why should we do this? So it is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela that when we hear these pastimes of the Lord and when we hear about our relationship with the Lord, then that strengthens our mind. It strengthens our mind to do devotional service with greater determination, right? And it makes our faith firm. And we then engage in devotional service with greater enthusiasm. So all this is interlinked, you see. And then when we are at this stage that we know, we now understand, then it gives us a taste for devotional service. Right? What is taste? So, for example, like if you didn't have taste for Mangala Aarti, you wouldn't leave the comfort of your cozy warm bed in peak Melbourne winter to come to Mangala Aarti, right? So it's only because you have tasted that nectar and that you tasted that sweetness of chanting and dancing in front of the Lord in those morning hours. And then that's for the pleasure of the Lord. And that sweetness, it carries you through the day, throughout the day. And then you want to come back again and again.
And if you have not, so, and then if you have taste, you go for book distribution, right? And you put yourself at the mercy of others out there. You don't know how people are going to respond to you. And you don't even know when you start your day whether you will be able to give out a single book or not. You don't know how your day will go. But you put yourself in that situation and you do it because you know the taste. You know it is what it is like to give Krishna to others. You see, because Lord, He reciprocates with us when we give Krishna to others. So this is called taste. And then Vairagya also comes. When taste comes on one side, and then Vairagya automatically comes. And we become detached. So attachment to Krishna and to devotional service, and detachment from material activities, mundane activities in life. So in this way, Jnana and Vairagya, they help us. We cultivate them and we move from strength to strength in a devotional or spiritual life. And you know, Vairagya, it also helps us actually even in the initial stages, because detachment means if you did not have the strength of detachment, then how could you follow the four regulative principles? You know, the very basic, the first promise that we give to our guru, you know, how do we follow that? Because we have detachment. We see something, we don't fall prey to it. We understand, no, I have taken a vow. I will do this because I have promised to do this. I have higher taste. How can you do that? Because you have higher taste. You have tasted something better, something higher. That which will please your soul permanently, then that will temporarily give you some mundane pleasure. Srila Prabhupada actually mentions one more point here. He says that translation, he says that after the death, he becomes attached to his newly born children. So he says that it's repetitive. How the conditioning is so strong that we just keep repeating the same mistakes again and again. So what happens when we make the same mistakes again and again? We need to take lessons again and again to understand why not to do this. So that's why Srila Prabhupada says that we must hear again and again how miserable this material world is. And I think we are getting a good dose of that in these last few verses in this chapter. You probably would have seen how the miserable condition of the living entity is described. Sometimes they're the jackals, sometimes they're the mosquitoes, right? So it is allegorical, actually, what it means that how we suffer and how many embarrassments we have to go through in family life. Be it children, be it your work, finances, health. It's very embarrassing. Keeps falling apart. So in this way, so that's why Srila Prabhupada says that you have to hear, and he himself always uses this one line, always. He says, this material world is full of miseries. And he says, even this body is the cause of so many miseries. Because he says, if we remember this, then it will help us remain strong. So the onslaught of Maya is continuous. And then the remembrance that the Maya is harassing us also has to be continuous. We should not at any moment fall prey to the illusions of Maya. And this happens. How does this happen? If we continuously be warned of what we should not do, of what is harmful, and we continuously engage in what is good for us or what is for our ultimate good. So in this way, we can overcome the onslaught of Maya, and then, as Srila Prabhupada says, not fall prey to this. You see, because this human form of life is very rare. After 8,400,000 species of life, we come to this form of life. And then in this human form of life, if we don't make good use of it, what's the point? We've just wasted, and we again, you know, take birth again, and suffering after suffering, life after life, that just goes on. So then Prabhupada, when he mentions this, he makes it clear. He says, make use of this human form of life. And how do we do this for devotees? Association of devotees is the most important thing. Because some of you may have experienced this, because there are peaks and troughs. Like sometimes we actually see that we're actually going down, that our devotional service has sort of become shaky. Either because of some family situation or because of some health situation or some situation. But if we cling to devotees, what will they give us? They'll just take us to Krishna. They'll just engage us in some devotional service. So it is very important to stay in the association of devotional service. And in that way we can
overcome the onslaughts of the illusions of Mayadevi. So I think I'll stop here. If anybody has any comments or questions or improvements. Yes, buddy.
My question is that with bhakti we get jnana and vairagya. But then sometimes in bhakti also we act ignorantly, so then how do we correct those mistakes that we have done when we've acted ignorantly?
Can you give me an example of how you acted ignorantly?
Like in bhakti we offend the Vaishnavas or something.
So, do you read Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yes.
What does it say about offending the Vaishnavas?
It's a very great offense, and like even if Shiva, you can fall down because of that.
Yes, so it is mentioned that it is called the mad elephant offense. The worst thing one can do is to offend another Vaishnava. You see, so we have to be very careful of this offense, not offend others. And the one thing that is needed for this, especially as children, you should all have a control on your tongue, right? Because children sometimes can be very impulsive. They don't think before speaking. In that way, you can offend each other. And sometimes you do also. I see, you know, girls talking to each other. Their one is morose because of, she said this to me, she said that to me. And right? So the best thing to do is, if it does happen, then what do you do? You pray to God Nithai for forgiveness, right? You say, please forgive me and please give me control of my tongue or my action if I've done something. And how do you rectify it? By asking forgiveness and by doing some seva to that person who you offended. Yes? You can either cook for them or you can read with them or you can do something that will make them happy, right? So because as long as that Vaishnava is feeling offended, then Krishna is feeling offended, right? But when that Vaishnava forgives you, because you've made enough effort to please him, then, and you've realized your mistakes, then Krishna forgives you. Yeah? Thank you. Thank you, Pari. Yes, Sylvia?
Thank you, Manaji, for the wonderful class.
Thank you.
My question is that you were saying that bhakti gives us detachment. So then, but sometimes when we do a lot of devotional service for other people, we get attachment from the word bhakti that does many services. So then, how do we get detachment again?
So I think you went too fast. So you said when you do devotional service to the Lord, then you become attached to that service?
Yeah.
And is that what you want detachment from that?
No, like the word bhakti has many services, so then we think that we can do it, we get attached to the services, so then how do we get detachment?
So attached to service, attachment. So this is attachment to devotional service. In one sense, there is nothing wrong in being attached to what you do, because if you're attached to your service, you'll put your quality time and you'll put a lot of efforts to do it nicely. And but one word of caution here, because Narasimha Kavach Prabhu, once he was giving class here in Melbourne, he was asked the same question, that you become attached to your service. Then he had said that, become attached to the mood of serving, not to service. Because what if there are 5 devotees wanting to do 1 service? Are you all going to fight over it because you want to do it? No. If you can't do that service, you do something else. Or you serve that devotee who's doing that service. Right? That's also service. Right? Because our movement is das and das and das. Servant of the servant of the servant. If somebody's serving Radha Vallabha, you serve them. Right? If somebody's cleaning the temple room, you serve them. Right? So it's the mood is that you should be attached to serving, be it any service, whether it is cleaning the temple courtyard, whether it is putting the shoes properly on the shoe racks, that's also service, right? And one more thing I can tell you about service is, this was mentioned by Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, when you do service, we say that we get mercy of the Lord, right? So one thing that strikes me is that for cleaning services, it is said that when you clean the temple of the Lord, or when you do any service in cleaning, it says a part of your heart becomes cleaned, right? And who doesn't want their heart to become clean? But I have not heard this about garland making or about any other service, about cooking. This is a cleaning service because it's a very menial service. And you put yourself at that level when you have to have that humility to take up that service. So I think that, so then Chaitanya Charitamrita said that mercy is more where need is more. So if you're doing a service which is needed, right, then you get more mercy because it's like the Lord asking you, can you do this? He's coming to you through a devotee who's asking you to do a service. You say, no, I only want to make garlands. I only want to iron clothes. So if you want to do that, then you're refusing a service that has come to you, right? So be attached to serving, not to a particular service, yes? And see here, it is very good to share services with others, yes? Because that's what Srimati Radharani does in the spiritual world, yes? She doesn't hog all the services. What does she do? When she sees a devotee is inclined to do service to Krishna, she pushes them. Okay, you go do and do the service, right? So this is what our mood should be. And serve those who are serving. Das and das and das. That is the main principle. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Sylvia. Yes, Rasa.
Thank you, Priti. You were mentioning the important system of Bhagavatam and the devotees who are honored by the discussion of the Bhagavatam. And the other important, some of the important points in your class were Jnana and Vairagya. So my question is, are you aware of characters and personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam who represent these qualities strongly? Who, for instance, in Bhagavatam, can you think of who represents Gan?
Gyan.
Yeah, and who can you think of who represents Vairagya in the Bhagavatam?
Okay, here's a quiz question. Who represents Jnana in Srimad Bhagavatam? Or who is a symbol of, you know, knowledge?
Four Kumaras represent
Jnana. Four Kumaras represent Jnana. Okay. Kapila Muni, yes. I also thought of that, that he's the epitome of knowledge, but yeah. And who else? Who represents Vairagya or detachment? Yeah, Jadbharat is he's the. But in our acharyas, I think Jnana and Vairagya is detachment is represented by Gaurkishore Vaishnavaji. No, Vairagya, who is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have in the acharyas we have one who represents extreme austerity and detachment and like that. Thank you. Yes, buddy.
Does Vairagya represent, like, does Bhakti Saraswati Thakur represent Vairagya? Because he did extreme austerity when he was trying to become the disciple of God.
Yeah, look, see, our acharyas, all of them had all these qualities in a great extent. In great extent, like they were complete symbols of detachment to material. They didn't, you know, were completely detached and completely attached to Krishna, right? And Bhakti Siddhartha Maharaj didn't even get married. He just lived a life of a sage and he just preached the glories of the Lord. And he's called the Loyan Guru because he preached very rigorously. Because at the time when he was on the planet, at that time impersonalism was thriving. And it was rampant, so he had to cut through that and he had to establish the principles of bhakti. So yes, he worked very hard on that. Yeah. Thank you.
There's one verse. Hare Krishna, wonderful class, I was listening online.
Thank you.
You were roaring. Thank you so much, Namahari. Thank you. So there's one verse, it appears in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it answers specifically this question, who represents what? In Navada Bhakti. So, Sri Vishnu Shravane Parichite Vayasati Ketane Prahlada Smarane Prahlada Smarane Tad Lakshmi Tad Charma Sevanam Lakshmi Prithu Pujane. Missing the meters or missing the words. Shri Vishnu Shravane Parikshet Vayasati Kirtane Prahlada Smarane Tat Bhakti Tat. Anyways, you get the point. So it tells Shukadeva Goswami is Shri Vishnu Shravane Acharya. Similarly, Kirtan is Parikshit Maharaj. Prahlad is of Smarana, the highest example. Then Pad Sevam is Lakshmiji, and Bhujanam is Prithu Maharaj. Then Vandanam is Akuras Tapi Vandane, Kapipate Dasye. Harumanji is of servitude. Kapipate Dasye. Arjuna Sakhe. And Sarvasvatmani Vedanam Bali. Bali Maharaj in that verse has been told as the example of giving one's everything to the Lord.
Surrendering everything to the Lord.
So, yeah. Thank you.
So, the 9 processes of devotional service and who has perfected which aspect of it. So, that's what's your answer. Thank you for your addition. Thank you very much. We'll stop here. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.